All right, what is going on, everybody? Welcome back to another day of Saber Sims DFS Office Hours. Today is Tuesday, July 2nd of 2024. Looking ahead, we have an 11-game MLB main slate today, as well as Wimbledon is still going on as well. So it should be a fun day of DFS. For those of you who are new here, welcome. My name is Andrew. I'm one of the coaches over here at SaberSim. This is a show where we go over how to use the SaberSim app, answer any and all DFS related questions. You get your questions in one of three ways here. First off, send us an email, support@sabersim.com. Second, post it live in the YouTube chat. Third way, post it in the Office Hours channel in our Discord server. If you're not in our Discord and want to get access to that channel, there is a link in the description of this video. You also get access to our similar channels, individual sport channels, and you get access to the rest of the SaberSim teams. Can't say enough good things about the Discord. With that said, we do the show Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern. We do the show on Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern. So tune in and get your questions answered. But with that said, we're going to jump right in here. Going to get the SaberSim app pulled up. Just a couple questions to get us started today. So if you guys have questions, now is a good time to get those in the queue. But going to start with this first question that came in Discord, and then we will jump over to the live YouTube chat. So first question came in from Sig Hemi. Question says, is it best to cap pitchers? And also, Chris, in his video, filters using ROI for both. Is there a difference between risk-adjusted ROI and ROI? And is it always better to go one unique under the max? Okay, so like three questions in this one. So let's hit them one at a time. First question is it best to cap pitchers? You know, the idea of capping pitchers is really, you know, a question of risk tolerance for yourself. You know, some people will say like, oh, you know, having one pitcher in 50% of my lineups is just too many. I would never want to have that pitcher in that many lineups. Some people say, hey, you know, I'm comfortable having a player in all of my lineups. I don't care. I think they're, you know, a great play. So that's one aspect. A second aspect is, well, how high owned is this pitcher, right? If, you know, we're playing a 3-game slate and, you know, what's a great pitcher? I'm getting older, guys. You know, the first pitchers that I thought of like are not either not good right now or like maybe not even playing. So I'm trying to think of, you know, somebody more relevant. Paul Skenes, you know, let's go with Paul Skenes, right? You know, it's a 3-game slate. He's the only pitcher, you know, in like the 9K plus range. And, you know, he's projected to be 75% owned. Well, if you haven't been 100% of your lineups, you know, that's really not that much leverage on the field at all. But if we're looking at the slate like today, you know, what does having 100% of Grayson Rodriguez at 30% ownership mean? Means you're about, you know, a little over 3x the field there. That's decent leverage, right? But what if you have 100% of somebody like Brady Singer at 3%? Well, now, you know, you are extremely, extremely leveraged on the field. So I say this to make the case that, you know, ownership projections also matter when it comes to deciding whether or not to cap a pitcher. You say, hey, I never want a pitcher in more than 50% of my lineups, but that pitcher is projected to be owned 75% in the contest. You're basically saying, hey, no matter what, I will never be positive leverage or even neutral on this play. I will always come in under the field because I'm setting that cap. So think about pitcher caps in terms of ownership projection and leverage. And just remember that, you know, whatever the right answer to the question is, it's whatever one makes you feel comfortable. Some people don't care. They want to let it ride. They're okay going all in. Some people like to be a little more conservative, spread out, get different. So whatever one makes you feel better at the end of the day is going to be the right answer. But I think it, more importantly, be aware of the player's ownership and whether or not you are neutral, even, or like positive leveraged or negative leveraged on the pitcher. All right. Second question. Is there a difference between ROI and risk adjusted ROI? Yes, there is. And the main difference here, let's just like run some lineups. And we could talk about this a little bit. Let's just run 500. And then I think I had some contest sims from like a demo. We're just going to keep this contest sim for the $4 20 max. And we will use this one for our demo. So just to talk about the metrics a little bit, ROI, just return on investment, risk-adjusted ROI, RAROI stands for risk-adjusted ROI, which is the omega ratio of the lineup. You know, my understanding of it is that the risk-adjusted ROI is describing the variance of the lineup. So, for instance, you could have two lineups that both have 100% ROI. Great. But one of the lineups won the contest three times in the contest sim and never cashed again. And then the second lineup maybe only won the contest one time, but had a higher cashing rate, had a lot of higher percentile finishes. So both ended up at 100% ROI, but they got there very differently. Well, the second lineup that only won once, but had a better cash rate, better finishes, that lineup is going to get a better risk-adjusted ROI score than the lineup that only won three times and never cashed again in this extreme example. And that's because that lineup ends up being way higher variance. And according to the omega ratio, you're going to want to play the second lineup rather than the first. So that is, you know, kind of the difference between the two metrics. As far as what you are seeing here when the contest sim runs and when you see the stats. So for the ROI, that is like, you know, on a lineup by lineup basis, that is the true return on investment percentage that the lineup achieved in the contest sim. The risk-adjusted ROI is not an exact calculation. So ROI, win rate, cash rate, ROI standard deviation are all, you know, exact mathematical, you know, descriptors from the contest sim. What risk-adjusted ROI does is, like I said, it looks at the other variables and then comes up with a score. Now, we needed to figure out a way to describe this score. So you can't like put numbers together and get the risk-adjusted ROI percentage of a lineup. It is kind of like a made-up number that we have that like reflects sim ROI. So how exactly that is calculated, I'm not sure. But the ROI is a real calculation from the contest sim. So I think that's why Chris in the video filters by ROI. And that's why I recommend filtering by ROI as well. I do all of my filtering. Like if I want to come into my pool and say, hey, you know, show me lineups that have an ROI that is greater than zero, it's always going to be a more concrete filter than just say, hey, show me lineups with a risk-adjusted ROI greater than zero. So I would use ROI rather than RAROI when filtering your pools. But as far as sorting metrics, I would sort with the risk-adjusted ROI. So filtering, ROI, sorting, risk-adjusted ROI. All right, question from John. Jordan Mensch, is that all three? Okay, wait, one more question. Is it always best to go one unique under the max? So this kind of goes back to the first point here with the pitchers. So see, like for me, the way I like to do this is, first of all, I like to move my columns around. That way I can make sure I always see exposure, pool, and leverage, right? These are the three things I'm worried, I care about. So I'm going to sort by exposure, and I'm just going to go to the alt tab. And then I'm going to see, hey, you know, I have some pretty high leverages, right? Like 5% owned Logan O'Hop, 40% of my lineups. 5% Drury, 35%. 5% Nito, 35%. 28% owned Lewis Gill, 75% exposure. You know, these are all really high. Now, if I were to go one under the max here, and I'm going to put all the lineups back in the pool just to do it, so I have more options here. Now, if I were to go one under the max for min uniques, looks like I can get to 8 min uniques. Does not look like I can get to 9. So 9 is the max. 9 is where no more are available. And then 8 would be like the max, right? So if I wanted to go at 8, you know, I'm going to see I have a lot flatter leverages here. Don't really have much leverage, like nobody more than like 17%, I think, is the highest here. You know, maybe this isn't enough leverage for me. Maybe I don't like this. Maybe I want to take a bigger stand on the slate. Maybe I don't want to be so spread out, right? So maybe I drop it down to 6-7, right? And then, you know, basically what I'm doing is saying, hey, do the exposures, the leverages that I'm seeing match my risk tolerance and do they agree with how I want to approach this slate? Maybe there's like a really good hitting spot that I think is a good pivot, but because I'm using such a high value of min uniques, I'm not getting to as much of that team as I would actually want to get to. So then, you know, that would be a reason to use a lower number of min uniques. So you don't get so spread out. You could still take some stands on the slate. But ultimately, you know, this is how I would be doing this, right? Where, you know, I've gone from 8 min uniques down to 6. And one thing I noticed is that, hey, I have 3 pitchers between 25 to 50% exposure, but I still don't have any batter higher than 20% exposure. And I'm totally cool with that. You know, not having any batter more than 20% owned, having pitchers a little bit higher exposed, but also a little bit higher owned. Like I would be comfortable at 6 min uniques here, even though 8 is the max, 7 is one less than the max. You know, to me, 6 makes sense, right? But like that is my opinion. And, you know, I might even go look at 5. Like, hey, what does 5 look like? You know, how do we feel about 5? And then now we get a couple batters at like 25%, taking a little bit bigger stands on some pitchers with Gill and Grayson Rodriguez, 50 to 60%. Some people might see this and be like, hey, you know, these two pitchers are really good. They're chalkier. I'm getting leverage on the chalky pitchers. I want to play, you know, more of like the best pitchers on the slate and then spread out on my batters. No more than 25% is fine for me. I'm happy with this, right? So like 5, I could see a case for playing 5 min uniques. I could see a case for playing 6. I could see a case for playing 7, right? So you got to figure out, hey, how is this affecting my lineup set? Do I agree with the changes that are taking place? And which one makes me feel the most comfortable about no matter what happens at the end of the night, I'm happy with the lineups that I ultimately submitted here. So that is how I would approach trying to answer those questions. All right, John said, Jordan mentioned that if you are making a ton of adjustments, you shouldn't use that as your base build. Does that mean don't use that build to sort by? So basically what he's saying is like, hey, if I'm coming in here, you know, making a bunch of minimax exposures, making all these changes, you know, it's going to be, you're going to have less lineups in your pool that meet those adjustments. What a better thing to do is to make all those adjustments, click rebuild lineups, and then now you're going to get a bigger pool of lineups that look more like what you want them to look like. So basically the idea is like how many lineups are in your effective pool? Like, yeah, we might have 500 lineups here, but there's only 100 lineups that are even remotely close to what you want to play on the slate. So there's, you know, 400 lineups in your pool that are effectively useless. He's saying, you know, don't just use that pool that only has 100 lineups that you actually want to play. Instead, use the rebuild lineups button to get 400 additional lineups that look a lot closer to what you actually want to play on the slate. So he's saying, make your adjustments, rebuild your pool, so you have more lineups that are closer to what you want, and then you can diversify further from that second run. So what he's saying is stay in the same build, rebuild the lineups. That way you have more diversification along with your inputs. So that would be my interpretation of what he was trying to say. All right. Next question here from Liam. Oh man, Liam, I missed your question, dude. My bad. I saw it and then I just missed it, but thanks for posting it again. All right. Liam said, is the profit plan still the latest advice contest and bankroll management wise, or if not, what are the latest thoughts? Do you have anything else you personally do that you would recommend? Okay. Good question. So yes, the profit plan is still the best advice. The profit plan, you know, I would say, one thing that can happen here is it could be a little bit hard to understand what to do when you start to play more and more volume. And one thing I would recommend is, you know, I was actually having a conversation about somebody with this, with a game plan earlier today, is that one mistake I made when I was like scaling up stakes was, you know, you pick a slate, right? You pick like a main slate and then you fill out all the low contest stuff. Well, then from there, you know, you have this additional bankroll, you know, what do, right? And it's very easy to continue to scroll up and down the lobby and then just go and play the next biggest thing and then go and play the next biggest thing. What I would highly recommend doing is going and playing the additional classic slates across all sites. So I did the math for this in, I think, NBA season. And contests that were like under $3, like all profit plan type contests across Owner's Box, Yahoo, MLB, I'm sorry, Yahoo, Owner's Box, DraftKings, and FanDuel for NBA, you could get down like $1,500 to like pushing $2,000 just in like the best contests, including classics and showdowns. Now, if you only did classic, you know, it would still be like a pretty high number. But instead of increasing the number of contests within a single slate, just increase the number of slates you're playing across all sites. So go play all four classic slates on DraftKings. Go play all 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We don't support strikeout only. Go play all five classic slates on FanDuel. Go play the ones on Yahoo. Go play the ones on Owner's Box. And like, what this almost does, because the reason for it is, okay, well, if 11 game main slate, you know, you don't have, you know, the Braves who score 14 runs, well, you know, you might be like really, really out of luck now. But if you're also playing the Turbo and you're also playing the Night, and not only is that game not on either of these, you know, these slates don't share games within each other either. So like, now you're getting multiple levels of almost bankroll diversification just by spreading out the number of slates you're playing. And, you know, you're spreading out your risk. You're getting more money down on a night-to-night basis. Same applies if you're playing the individual showdowns. You know, you could brick one and, you know, has no bearing on the other. So increasing number of slates is something that I would highly recommend if you're trying to scale your play, trying to, you know, take the profit plan a step further. That is, in my opinion, one of the best things you can do. All right. Looks like we had a follow-up from John. I'm going to stick on this one from Liam, and then we'll jump back to John. Don't want to do too much back and forth. So Liam said, how do you attack the other classic slates? Just the flagship tournaments tend to be the only worthwhile GPPs. I guess it depends what you have access to, but you know, I know that they usually run like a quarter jukebox, a $1.20 max, and then like probably like a few single entries. I think there's usually like a $5 single entry or something like that. And it just depends, you know, how much bankroll you have available. But I mean, that right there for like some players, like an additional like $30 times like three slates, like with like the turbo, the second turbo and the night is, you know, going to make an impact for them. One thing, as far as like flagships would go, you know, I actually like the idea of playing the flagships on the alt slates first. Like they're a little bit smaller. You don't always have to 150 max them, even though some of them are, but like some of them might be like a 70 max. Some of them might be like a 90 max or something like that. So you're getting a little bit smaller field overall with the number of entrants. Some of them could be a little bit cheaper. Like they could be like $10 instead of, you know, 18 or something like that. So I kind of like the idea of playing the flagships on the alternate ones too. I think FanDuel runs like a $9 flagship as opposed to like, you know, the $15 and things like that. So there's different ways of like kind of maneuvering that, but I kind of like, you know, play the flagships on the turbos, the knights, and then play the flagship on the main like last. But that's just my opinion. So hope that helps you out. All right, jumping back to John. Okay, John said, sorry, I was referencing the self sim. What's the purpose of filtering by ROI greater than zero? Are the top lineups given in the sim positive ROI anyways? So basically let's talk about the self sim a little bit, right? So let's say I go and I'm going to create another contest sim for this $4.20 max ad contest sim. And then I'm going to go back to my build. And then I'm going to go to the contest sim settings. And then I'm going to change my field lineup source from the static field to my own build, right? This is the big topic lately. And then I'm going to identify this contest sim, give it a little bit different name here. So the idea here is that let's say that I have these 500 lineups. And then let's say I run these two sims. Well, in one contest sim, a lineup could grade out positively, right? Let's say a lineup grades out positively against the static field. Well, then when I run that subset of positive lineups against the other lineups in this build, maybe it grades out negatively. And that is basically what you are trying to get rid of when you run the self sim. You are trying to account for, okay, from this pool, this now pool of leveraged lineups, of lineups that do well against the field, which lineups do well against each other? And that's what you're accounting for. And you can see this by the number of lineups that get trashed, right? So in the first contest sim against the field, I'm going to say, hey, show me lineups with ROI greater than zero. And I trashed 401 lineups, which seems like a lot. And then I'm going to say, go from the self sim and then show me lineups that are also greater than zero. And then now my pool, my trash lineups have gone from 401 to 465. So there was an overlap of 64 lineups that they graded out well in one contest sim. But when I put those lineups in a contest against each other, they did not grade out well anymore. And this is like the concept of, hey, you know, ultimately the goal is to, you know, place very, very high in your contest, right? So let's say, you know, you're trying to shoot for like a top 1% finish. Well, if you have 10,000 entries in your contest, top 1% is 100th place. You know, it's good, but it's still not first, right? So how do you go from 1% to 0.1% to 0.01%? And that's kind of what this self sim is trying to accomplish. It's trying to take the lineups that grade out well against the field and say, hey, on a second level, how do they grade out, you know, when pitted up against other lineups that also grade out well against the field? And that is what it's accomplishing there. All right. Hit that follow-up from John. Gonna just keep scrolling down here. Liam said, thank you. Yeah, man, happy to help out. Jerome said, is the strikeouts only sim working? The option is there, but it doesn't seem to actually be available to create any entries. As far as I know right now, we do not support the strikeout only format. I think it's like really, really new for FanDuel. I've only seen it the past couple weeks. So I'm almost positive we are not supporting strikeout only at the moment. All right. MCG said, when I buy inside of your program, do I get that particular platform? I am new to your channel. Thank you. Okay. Awesome. Welcome. So we have three subscription levels, standard, pro, and ultimate. And then all of them come with all sports. All of them, you're able to build lineups. The biggest difference is on standard, you can build 500 lineups. On pro, you can build 5,000 lineups. And then on ultimate, you get access to the contest sims, which is this contest simming ability with the ROIs, the risk adjusted ROIs. All these sorting metrics come from the contest sim on ultimate. So those are like the big differences between the plans. You can also find more info at sabersim.com/pricing for details about the differences. All right. Next question. Huge difference from a bigger slate to small slates. For example, I've won quite a few like dime times and 300s ones, but never close in like the 10K or 15. I use the same process, but never close. What should I be looking at in those? FYI, all lineups are 20 max. Okay. So, you know, there are going to be differences definitely here. You know, the smaller the slate, the closer and closer you're going to move towards needing like an optimal lineup. On these bigger slates, you can get away with it a little more, right? So one thing is like you're always looking for the winning lineup, not the highest scoring possible lineup, right? You're really not going to find that, especially on these larger slates, even like a two-game, three-game MLB slate, you probably won't even find it. So not like MLB is a sport where you're not going to need an optimal all the time here. I would say that, you know, diversification is important. I would say mix in some single entry and some three max into your contest selection, right? One thing that we found in our back testing was that players who were only playing, you know, 20 max and 150 max needed a bigger bankroll to weather the swings than players that were mixing in single entry and 3 max with their contest selection there. So playing some of those smaller field stuff, playing some of that single entry is going to help you to weather the swings of DFS. But I would definitely start with your contest selection. As far as like process goes, you know, I'm not doing like a ton different. I would say that, you know, if you want to take a stand I just think like your overall exposures might be a little bit higher in some of this smaller field stuff, or I'm sorry, smaller slate stuff, as opposed to these large classic slates where there's ultimately probably a lot of paths to victory, as opposed to like needing, you know, a particular team, game, pitcher. Follow up from John. Aren't lineups that are being trashed probably at the bottom anyways? Not necessarily, right? Especially like those 64 lineups that overlap. Those are kind of the ones that we want to be aware of. And then especially once you start to diversify your lineups, when you start to use mini uniques, you know, you might get some of that overlap, right? You might be likely to come across one of those lineups if you are going further and further down in your pool. So that is another reason to be aware and be careful when doing it. It is just simply better and easier to do both of the filters there and to get rid of that overlap than to, you know, not do it. All right. Looks like we are caught up here in the YouTube chat, also caught up in the Discord. So appreciate you guys tuning in. I will be right back here tomorrow, Wednesday, July 3rd for our next show. Happy to be back. Hope you guys enjoyed having Jordan for a couple days here. And until tomorrow, everybody, take care. Good luck. I'll see you all. Thanks. Bye.